You're listening to PetLifeRadio.com.
Is your pet stressed out? Does your pet need annual vaccines? Which pet is best for a child? Would you know if your dog was in pain? Pet Life Radio presents The Pet Doctor, where you'll learn everything about keeping your pet healthy and happy. From pet care, pet meds and grooming, to pet food, pet insurance and dental care, this is the place to find out everything there is to know about pet wellness. Whether you have a dog, cat, reptile, or rabbit, you'll find answers for your pets straight from the vets, because it's your pet. Health matters. Please welcome your Pet Doctor host, veterinary media consultant and veterinarian, Dr. Bernadine Cruz.
It seems that every day in the news, some disaster or emergency situation has arisen in the U.S. that impacts people and their animals they care for. The emergency may affect a single family or cities and counties. Disasters know no seasons: snowstorms, tornadoes, hurricanes, earthquakes, fires, and floods. We expect the local, state, or national authorities to take care of us, but who takes care of the animals? What can you do to prepare your entire family for potentially life-threatening situations? Today, I'm going to be speaking with Dr. Heather Case. She is the American Veterinary Medical Association's Coordinator for Emergency Preparedness and Response. We'll be right back after this short break.
Please have a seat in the waiting room. The doctor will be with you shortly, right after these messages.
Hey, ready to take a walk? Not just you, but the whole family. It's the 2009 Whisker Walk, Sunday, June 7th from 11 to 3 at the Lancaster Fairground in Lancaster, Massachusetts. Pet owners and animal lovers walk to lend a paw to benefit the animal shelters and pet charities they love. Come see exhibits, demonstrations, educational programs, special attractions, product giveaways, entertainment, auctions, raffles, food, fun, and things for adults and kids to see, do, and buy, both human and pet-related. Whisker Walk 2009, a fun day for everyone. For more information, log on to whiskerwalk.org.
Coast to coast and around the world, it's Oh Behave with Arden Moore. Find out why cats and dogs do the things they do and get the latest buzz from wagging tongues and tails in Rin Tin Tinseltown. From famous pet experts and best-selling authors to television and movie stars, you'll get great tail-wagging pet tips and have a fur-flying fun time. Oh Behave with America's pet edutainer, Arden Moore. Every week on demand, this is the place for a special paparazzi treat. Only on PetLifeRadio.com. Let's Talk Pets on PetLifeRadio.com. Welcome back to The Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio with Dr. Bernadine Cruz. The doctor is in and we'll see you now.
Dr. Case, thank you very much for getting on the phone today, because I know that AVMA and your VMAT group is getting ready to be deployed. Can you tell us where they're going?
Well, that's correct, and thanks for the opportunity to be on the phone today. Right now, we are in the process of coordinating very closely with the State Veterinarian's Office in North Dakota in the rapid rising floodwaters. And currently, we're on standby. Our commander is Dr. Gary Goman, involved also with his state medical veterinary reserve corps. And he and the state teams are currently preparing to deploy to assist in the flooding evacuation in North Dakota.
It seems so the number of large-scale disasters over the past few years has just risen dramatically. Is this my imagination or is it real?
No, in fact, if we look back just not even quite a year ago, or I should say just over a year ago, to the flooding situation in the Midwest, specifically in Iowa, if I'm remembering correctly, that was the 600-year flood. And the percentage of rainfall that was experienced in the Midwest last year in the flooding in Iowa was in the hundreds of percent above normal.
So you've had enough hurricanes. I know we'll talk a little bit later about you getting involved in hurricanes and trial by fire, learning how to do everything that you're doing now. But I think a lot of people would be surprised. You know, we do know when there is an emergency, the National Guard comes out, the Red Cross will set up their shelters for us. They're not taking care of animals?
Well, we've learned a lot since Hurricane Katrina, and certainly the passage of what's called the PETS Act, or the Pet Evacuation Transportation Standards Act, which is essentially an amendment to the Stafford Act and allows for state and local governments now, if they plan ahead and prepare for pets, companion animals, household pets, and service animals are is the technical term, there is some funding and there is greater awareness. Made great strides since Hurricane Katrina, but the take-home message really is starting at the family level, that each individual family needs to determine how best they can take their pets with them and evacuate before a disaster.
What should a family do to prepare? What are some simple things they can do?
Well, certainly one of the things that I say is a really good place to start is, and we've sort of touched on it already, so if you live in the Midwest and you live in a floodplain, or even if you didn't really think you lived really close to the river, but looking back statistically over the last 2 years at how many floods are occurring, determine what the most likely reason for you to evacuate might be. And so that's part of determining your plan. But recognizing that the number one emergency across the country, unfortunately, is house fires. And so really, regardless of whether you live in Hurricane Alley or if you live in a floodplain, you still want to have a plan. And then think about some of the basic things. For instance, if you have multiple pets, do you have carriers for each of those animals? If you have cats, have you thought of the fact that if you evacuate with your cat, not only might you need a carrier to house your cat, but your cat might need to be comfortable in that carrier for a while. So think about having a big enough carrier where you could make a makeshift litter box, for instance. Some of it's somewhat common sense, but not everyone wants to think of the fact that they might need to live in temporary housing, or they might need to evacuate to a friend's house, for instance, and have their pets in a comfortable environment. So thinking of some of the basic things, in addition to carrier, for instance, food and water or any medication that your pet might be on.
What I'll oftentimes tell my own clients, because the problem here in Southern California is going to be earthquakes, fires, and occasionally we'll get the floods after we've had the fires, is putting together just even a small backpack for your pet that has the food, the water, if you have a dog, something to pick up after it so you can keep a cleaner environment, extra name tags, even a picture of your pet is a great idea in case somehow you become separated. So you can say, this is what my German Shepherd looks like, since after a while all German Shepherds might look alike to somebody who is trying to help you out.
We've actually recommended going a step further, in part from lessons learned during the evacuation efforts of Katrina, is a photo of you and your pet, a recent photograph of you with your pet. And you also touched on identification. One of the things that we learned is, you know, in this cellular age and mobile age, everything works great if you have a cell number on your animal's identification tag. However, maybe think about having a second phone number for your Aunt Sally that lives across the country, so that, you know, that if you're in touch with that person and you're separated from your animal and the towers are down or your cellular service isn't working during the evacuation zone, someone else is capable of connecting you back with your pet.
Great idea, somebody out of the area.
Right.
You had mentioned earlier that Dr. Goman is possibly going to be deployed to the Fargo area with their floods right now. What can people do when they have large animals? If you have livestock, what can they do to prepare them?
Right, and livestock are tricky, and it's some of the basics. One of the things that we recommend, particularly for horse owners, and your state has gotten fairly good at evacuating large numbers of horses, is thinking again back to transportation for one. Do I have a horse trailer? Okay, if I don't have a horse trailer, am I associated with someone who has one? And so something that I know has been quite successful in Southern California have been networks of horse owners developing, sort of this, I have three horses and I have a one horse trailer, which, you know, is probably not real common, but the point being, I know I'm going to need assistance to evacuate my animals, and here's a list of phone numbers that I've predetermined from friends of mine who have said that in an emergency evacuation, they're willing to assist me. In terms of identification for horses, one of the things that we have thought of or would suggest is, you know, certainly you can microchip a horse, and you can have an ID tag on a halter, but think about maybe taking a luggage tag and putting your name and address and, again, a couple of different cell phone contact numbers. You could braid that into the horse's mane, for instance, or a livestock marking pencil I know has been used for people to write their contact information. You know, and again, for horse owners, we would suggest having things in your evacuation materials, for instance, Coggins papers or health certificates, registration papers, those sorts of things, in addition to contact information for veterinarians. You may want to think about veterinarians about 60 miles outside of where you live, or having sort of a backup, a sister veterinarian that certainly your own practitioner would be able to refer you to in the event that you have to evacuate outside of the area.
And sometimes it's amazing how huge these areas can be that are affected. I know, especially with Katrina. We are talking a bit about also the VMAT teams. What is a VMAT team?
So the VMAT teams are, it stands for Veterinary Medical Assistance Team. And essentially, if you look back over the years, we've been already referring to the flooding of last season and the flooding of this season and Hurricane Katrina. Really, if you look back to 1992 and Hurricane Andrew, that was really the beginning of what we now know as the VMAT program. And essentially, it was sort of the first wake-up call, if you will, where there were hundreds of thousands of displaced animals, and really no firm animal emergency preparedness plan. And over the course of 15 years, the American Veterinary Medical Association, we've had a partnership for the program with the federal government. And a year ago, both parties decided that there were new avenues for assisting the states, and in particular, the AVMA has moved our program now so that we're a private AVMA program focusing on assisting states at that state and local level. And so that's what the Veterinary Medical Assistance Team program is built around.
What is the actual makeup of the team? Is it just veterinarians? Are there a support group? What do they do? Who makes them
up? Sure. So what we have now are a group of individuals who, as I've mentioned, we have about a 15-year history in emergency preparedness and response with this Veterinary Medical Assistance Team program. And we are working primarily with veterinarians and veterinary technicians. And how the program works now is we break them into a 4-to-6-person team. And these teams are equipped with basic treatment capabilities. And so they are capable, for instance, of staying in what we call in the disaster world austere conditions, meaning that we can send them out into a disaster zone. They're not expecting necessarily to be put up in the Ritz Hotel. They're survivors. They're what we call first responders and boots on the ground sort of individuals. So they come in with a backpack that has a sleeping bag and basic food supplies so that they're, as we call, self-contained or capable of taking care of themselves for about 72 hours in the field. And then they also, they have a couple of different functions. The first function is that they can go in for a state after a disaster and assess what the veterinary infrastructure looks like, meaning, are there operating veterinary clinics after the floods, or have all those veterinary clinics been affected and so they're not able to assist the animals in the area? And when the teams do an assessment for a state, then it's possible that the state may have its own volunteer veterinary reserve corps or a state animal response team that the state can then send in. So that's sort of the first function of this team. And if the state has sent in their own medical reserve corps and the recovery efforts go on longer than anticipated and they need assistance, or if the state has not gotten to a point yet where they're prepared and capable of assisting these animals with veterinary care, then we have also a basic treatment team, and that's, again, 4-to-6 veterinarians and veterinary technicians working together that can come in and do the hands-on veterinary care for a state in a shelter system.
This sounds like a tremendous commitment that these teams are making. How are they funded?
Well, we're very fortunate in that we have been funded by our American Veterinary Medical Foundation, who has provided generously support for the program throughout its 15-year history and moving forward with the new mission of working as an AVMA, AVMF program at the state level. They continue to support us, and it is generously a gift to the state. And we send these teams out. The early assessment teams are available as a gift, again, funded by the foundation for 72 hours of boots on the ground time. And the basic treatment teams are available for up to 5 days if the states need them.
Now, it sounds as though sometimes you'll have people who are directors of programs and they know the theory of it, but they've never been in the field. You, however, Dr. Case, I know, have been in the field. Can you give us your perspective from where you've been, what you saw, where maybe some of the heartwarming stories?
Oh, absolutely. And that's exactly right. Certainly those of us who work on these issues often full-time have that boots on the ground experience, which sort of, you know, awakens your interest in this activity. Lots of challenges, of course, when you're talking about emergency preparedness and response, and in particular evacuating animals. There have been lots of lessons learned, some of them we've talked about in terms of making sure that we identify animals. And if we are evacuating humans, certainly we know that a very large percentage of the human population, and in fact, AVMA keeps statistics, 60% of the U.S. households have pets. So we know that we have pets and people to work with in these evacuations. But some of the heartwarming stories, one of the heartwarming stories that I can recall, and all of those of us who were deployed to Hurricane Katrina have stories like these. But, you know, several weeks, some of these evacuation efforts can take many weeks before everything is back to some form of normal. And during Katrina, certainly that went into weeks on end. And we had a couple who had given up all hope of finding their pet. And I was fortunate to meet with them. And it was a veterinarian, actually, that assisted, aside from myself, a veterinary examination that assisted in finding this pet. It was a cat that they were searching for, and it was an older black female. And, of course, we had lots of older black females in the pet shelter. But what the owner could recall was that she had had her cat to the veterinarian just a few months prior to Hurricane Katrina, and they had diagnosed a small bump under the tail that they determined not to be a big concern, but that it was there, so some type of identifier. And I had shown the couple cats up and down our medical ward, and there was one last cat that I wanted to show them. And sure enough, there were two things. One, this cat did have a little bump under her tail, but they had also, every once in a while, had written an address of where they'd taken the animal from. And sure enough, on this cat's particular record was an address of where they had found her, and it matched with this owner. And this was their 18-year-old cat named Lydia.
Oh, my goodness. So,
that was, in my mind, probably my favorite reunion story, but we all had reunion stories. And we hope for reunions. Where we work now in the post-Katrina days really is, how do we make sure that if we have to house pets separate from their people, you know, how do we keep them coordinated so that we make sure there's reunion?
A very large undertaking, and alas, the services of VMAT, the AVMF, and the AVMA are needed way too frequently. And there's also what we didn't have a chance to touch on, even bioterrorism, knowing that so many of the possible diseases that can be spread to humans through bioterrorism can also affect animals, and veterinarians are likely to be on the front lines protecting human health as well as animal health, and see how VMAT could get involved with that too.
Absolutely, absolutely. And one component that's probably a really good place to, you know, to end that we have with the VMAT program is providing emergency-related training at the state and local level to build the capacity that we've just talked about. So we send our experienced and trained veterinary medical assistance team members out into the states to help build up that first response and that first line of defense so that the states are better prepared.
Dr. Case, if the listener right now said, I just need to do something, I need to get involved with this, I need to help, what can they do?
There's two things that I would suggest to a veterinarian listening today. One, absolutely, education of clients is imperative. Education themselves, preparing everyone to think about what we've just talked about. And if you have pets, it's somewhat basic information, but preparing a plan. Certainly the AVMA offers a brochure. It's called Saving the Whole Family, and we have actually a disaster preparedness series on our website, and that can be found at www.avma.org. Kind of goes over a lot of the topics that we've talked about in a little more detail. The second thing, however, is as a veterinarian, we need to be involved. We need to know who in our communities would be in charge of responding if animals are involved. We need to reach out, start talking to people who are in traditional emergency management roles. It might be your police department, your fire department. You know, start talking to the officials in your city and make sure they know that you have special expertise that you can provide simply because of your training as a veterinarian to assist in the health and well-being of animals. And in particular, we're talking about following an emergency preparedness or emergency response.
And if somebody wanted to say they had some extra money, they had no idea what to do with it, can they donate money?
Absolutely, and I would encourage them to go to the foundation's website at www.avmf.org, where they can learn about how they can assist further in these efforts.
Well, Dr. Heather Case, thank you so much for being with us today. After the short break, we'll be right back, and we'll be talking to somebody from the American Veterinary Medical Foundation and learn what they're doing besides helping VMAT, helping people, and helping pets, as well as other animals. We'll be right back after the short break. Stay tuned.
Please have a seat in the waiting room. The doctor will be with you shortly, right after these messages.
Greetings, human. What planet am I on?
Welcome to Pet Planet. Here's a copy of Pet Planet magazine, Florida's most informative and fun pet resource magazine. It features heartwarming stories and informative articles from local and national pet experts.
Excellent.
Pet Planet magazine offers Operation Planet Rescue, helping rescued pets find new homes. And it's available at 500 locations in South and Central Florida and 24/7 on the internet at petplanetmagazine.com. If you're out and about with your pet, you may be featured in paparazzi, candid pictures of you and your pet. For up-to-date pet-friendly events, activities, and pet-related services and products, Pet Planet Magazine is your final destination.
I shall take this magazine home with me.
Back to your home planet?
No, to my condo in Boca.
Pet Planet Magazine. Check them out at www.petplanetmagazine.com or 352-394-8578. It's out of this world.
School's in session on Pet Life Radio with Teacher's Pet. Learn how to communicate with your pet, train your pet, and see the world from your pet's point of view. You may even learn a few tricks yourself. Teacher's Pet, only on PetLifeRadio.com.
Let's Talk Pets on PetLifeRadio.com. Welcome back to The Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio with Dr. Bernadine Cruz. The doctor is in, and we'll see you now.
Well, welcome back. At the top of the hour, we were speaking with Dr. Heather Case. She is with the American Veterinary Medical Association and was telling us that all too many times the Veterinary Medical Assistance Team, VMAT, from AVMF and AVMA, are going out into the field. So AVMF, the American Veterinary Medical Foundation. We're speaking right now with Michael Cathy. He is the director of the American Veterinary Medical Foundation. Thank you very much, Mike, for being with us today.
Thank you, Dr. Cruz.
My question for you is, people that heard what VMAT does going, wow, this is amazing. This hasn't been something that's been ongoing forever. When did the VMAT team again come into existence?
Well, I believe about 3 years ago, as an effort that came out of Katrina, is when the VMAT got up and running and became a very viable, legitimate program of the AVMA and the AVMF.
And AVMF, again, exactly what is that?
Okay, we're the American Veterinary Medical Foundation, so we're the premier foundation for veterinarians in the country, both supporting projects from the veterinarians, but also accepting philanthropic and charitable contributions on their behalf.
And we'll talk a little bit about that, too, because there are some great ways that people can donate that is totally painless and doesn't even cost them really anything, going online, so I love that.
Right. our primary mission is embracing the well-being and medical care of animals. And, of course, our, as you know, one of our biggest missions is around disaster preparedness and emergency training. And but that also includes relief to veterinarians, relief to their practices. And these are veterinarians and practices who, in the time of a disaster, much like we've got going on now in North Dakota, if that veterinarian or their practice is out helping the animals in that area and providing services, we actually will reimburse them for some of those costs.
That is amazing, because too often, yes, you know, the veterinarians, we are ones, we love animals. That's why we got into this profession. And when we see there's a disaster, you try and drop all and get out there and do the best you can. But then, of course, your income is going to be affected, and any type of a reimbursement is always well appreciated. I recently received a press release that I thought was somewhat amazing. People might not realize that the Red Cross, when there is an emergency, they're not in a position to take care of animals. Is that correct?
That's correct. And so we've partnered, as you know, we've partnered with the American Red Cross, and we're their arm, if you will, dealing with animals and animal issues in time of disaster. And again, the large disasters that we hear about, certainly that's the case, but I'm also very concentrated on the day-to-day individual disasters in our communities, and we're right there with the American Red Cross during all of that.
Give an example of what happens on the day-to-day local level.
Well, you know, say someone, you know, every day, and it happens, it doesn't make the media as much, but, you know, a home burns that, or a house fire happens, that they have pets. And in some cases, it may be to a point where that family can no longer even provide for those pets. So at a local level, this MOU will address, and activities that we're putting into place will address, taking care of those animals, getting them to a local veterinarian or a local shelter to be taken care of during that time of local disaster.
And MOU, for those who aren't familiar, is a Memorandum of Understanding. And this is something that has been forged between the AVMA, the American Veterinary Medical Association, the Foundation, and the Red Cross. Is that correct?
That's correct.
I think sometimes the scope, you know, on a local level, you are affected, your family is affected, and of course this is near and dear to your heart because it's up close and personal. People, I think, sometimes don't realize the vast numbers that animals can be affected in disasters. I heard someplace that disasters oftentimes will affect livestock and animal beings to a greater extent than the humans.
Yeah, because, you know, they're not... Luckily, I guess for humans, we kind of have some concept of getting prepared for this disaster. I think an animal doesn't. So in approaching storms or approaching floods, I think it's just a compounded effect on the animal.
And it's so important. Dr. Case brought up the fact that AVMA has on their website brochures that you can just download to help get yourself, to get your livestock, because not everyone listening is going to be living in the suburbs. Some of them are going to be more rural, or just even where I live in Southern California, there are quite a few canyon areas where people have quite a bit of livestock. And when we get our fires, they've learned how to coordinate their neighbors to get those animals out there ASAP. And alas, they've had too much experience now in doing this and are doing a very good job of it.
Absolutely. And also, Dr. Cruz, there is a place on our website about pet first aid. So even for a pet owner or others to do a little bit of, immediate action before they could get to their veterinarian, or in a case where the veterinarian wasn't available, it actually begins to train the pet owner in some first aid, first responder type things.
That's a great idea, Mike, because I know here in Southern California, with our possibility of earthquakes, and we're right now having swarms of earthquakes, thankfully they're small, but they're concerned about them, that if there were a major disaster, the only person that you're going to be able to rely on, the only person your pets are going to be able to rely on, is you, because first responders are going to be overwhelmed, so you need to take care of yourself, take care of your pets. So that is a great idea.
Yeah, which is a great segue. It's as almost we rehearsed it and we didn't. The foundation, the American Veterinary Medical Foundation, we've been funding a program for 2 years now that we're now in serious conversations with them for a memorandum of understanding called BART. BART stands for Basic Animal Rescue Training. And this is taking a veterinarian and training first responders. So instead of like the VMAT program, which you've heard about, which are veterinarians training veterinarians to be on call for a major disaster, this program, BART, is veterinarian training first responders, training firemen, training EMTs, training police officers, training sheriff's departments, so that when they're the first ones on site in either a small or a large disaster, they will have some concept of what to do.
That is great. This is the first time I've heard about this, so it definitely wasn't anything that was prepared ahead of time. How far along is this program going, and what can the general public do to kind of push this along, saying, yes, we want this. We want our firemen to be able to help our animals.
Yeah, well, BART right now is a program that began in the state of Minnesota, and it's very well known, I think, throughout the state of Minnesota. Lots of fire departments, police departments have been trained in Minnesota. They've been able to do some of that in Minnesota with funding from the American Veterinary Medical Foundation. But, of course, we've seen that, hey, there's some there, and now we're working, and you know, we're kind of in the infant stages of working out a strategic plan with BART Minnesota. And so for now, I would just encourage people that if they are interested, they could reach out to us at the American Veterinary Medical Foundation, avmf.org. You probably had avma.org earlier, but at avmf.org, and at least there's a place there for people to inquire, leave their name and number, we'll get back with them, that sort of thing.
These studies these projects, the VMAT and BART that you're involved with, AVMF, I think are just absolutely fantastic and marvelous, and it's definitely something that can be in the public's eye. But there are other things that AVMF does. Can you give us a little bit of background what other activities you're involved with?
Yeah, there's probably two other major what I would call categories. One of them is just basic animal health studies, trying to devote some monies and time into research and, you know, supporting animal research for animal illness, disease, that sort of thing, in order to make sure that in the future our animals are safe. And the other thing that's important about animal health studies is so many times, as you know, Dr. Cruz, the research being done about animal illness, animal health, also is very applicable to human illness and human health. And so we feel like that's one broad thing. The other one is education, veterinary education. So scholarships to veterinary students, funding for veterinary education type projects.
Do you have any idea offhand, Mike, how expensive veterinary school is?
Well, it's funny that you, again, a non-rehearsed topic. We're working on a program right now that we're calling the Rural Veterinarian Recruitment and Retention Program, because as you know, there's a major shortage of veterinarians in rural America, and most of those deal with food animal veterinarians. And it's a program we're developing to try to encourage veterinary school graduates to go practice in rural America where those food animal operations are. And to do that, we're working out a way where if you will go practice there for a period of time, for each year that you practice, we will begin to almost help you pay off your debt, your education debt. And a long way to get to your question about what that may be, they're saying anywhere from $100,000 to $120,000 will be the debt that a new veterinary graduate will have when they get out of school.
And what many listeners probably are not aware of, or maybe they are, is that what a veterinarian gets paid and what an MD gets paid are not really on the same level. So oftentimes we'll get into this profession because, yes, we love animals, we want to help people, we want to help their animals, and help the environment at the same time, this one world, one health, one medicine. So, yes, I'm all for your efforts right there.
A veterinarian is sometimes probably their own enemy, because they are so giving, so gracious, that they probably even undercut their services, their fees, to be able to help pet owners and their animals, or just animals in general, that it sometimes gives their own economic situation a challenge.
It is tough, but it's hard to say no to someone when that's
Absolutely.
Their kitten, that's their puppy, and they have no money. It's like, okay, let's see what we can work out here for you.
Exactly, exactly.
So here's our segue into money. So for the AVMF, in order to function, you need money, as everyone else. What are ways that people can donate? Yes, they can just go to avmf.org, but are there other long-term ways that they can donate to you?
Well, that's probably the easiest, is reaching out to us through avmf.org or just getting in touch with us. We have several appeals that go out throughout the year, appealing on different avenues or different vehicles for our projects. Right now, most of that appeal is internally to the veterinary profession, mainly to members of the American Veterinary Medical Association. You know, there's 78,000 member veterinarians, so most of our appeal is going there. There is some corporate appeal or industry appeal that happens as well, and of course our long-term goal that the AVMF has never went down that road is to the public, and so that's, you know, it's a place it's kind of an unlimited market to go into the public, and that's why we're developing programs like BART, so it will become relevant at a local level so that we can reach out to them for funding.
I went to the AVMF website and saw that you have estate planning. Is that just for veterinarians, or that could be used by the public?
It could be used by anyone. Again, we have not been doing the best job we could be with that. We've been doing much more internal. So, for example, we'll have estate planning sessions. I think there'll be one each day at the American Veterinary Medical Association's convention in Seattle this summer. So we're, again, geared more toward those member veterinarians who are attending the annual convention. I'm hoping someday that we will be on the road, if you will, you know, maybe six or seven places a year that we could be around the country also providing estate planning sessions right at the local level.
So you don't have to have as much money as Leona Helmsley to donate, but any type of donation would be great.
That's right, and in fact, when you talk about charitable giving in this country, most of the charitable giving comes from people who don't have a lot of money. You know, it's kind of the those who have less are usually the bigger givers, though I would like to have some of Leona Helmsley's trust money. it will certainly help us, you know, if we have a... I've always said it's better almost to have $1 million donors than $1 million donor, because if something should happen to that $1 million donor, you got a problem. But if you've got 1 million people giving you a dollar, you've got a base of friends.
Somewhat how the March of Dimes started, everyone sending in their dimes. Now with
That's
inflation,
right.
Everyone needs to send in their dollars instead of their dimes.
Yeah, and we have Dr. Cruz, we have a great, the AVMF, like a lot of animal-related charities and even veterinary colleges, we have a pet memorial program. I'm trying to change the term of that a little bit to a pet memorial and tribute program, where I believe people would also pay tribute to their pet, not just at the time that a pet passes away. But right now that pet memorial program is again mainly coming from veterinarians who are making very nice, generous contributions on behalf of their clients' pets when they expire. And we then acknowledge those gifts from the veterinarian to the pet owner, and it's one way we generate a lot of new contacts to the foundation every year is through the pet memorial program.
And sometimes it is so difficult when you have a friend who's lost a pet. And some people say, oh, it's just a dog, it's just a cat. But no, to those of us who they have become extended members of our family, that's a very special part of our heart that is now left us. So I can see that you have a friend whose pet has passed away, contact the AVMF and make a donation in that pet's name, and I'm sure your friends would greatly appreciate it.
Yeah, we have a very nice certificate that we send that with the pet's name on it. We ask for the pet's name and a very nice certificate that someone could either stick away in an album or even frame it if they so wished to remember their pet.
The other thing I found on your website today was a very interesting way of donating using, instead of Google as a search engine, Good Search, and then eBay you're also associated with?
Yeah, and there's lots of those, and in fact there's some even that we're not, haven't got our website completely up to date. You know, PetGive is another one, iGive. PetGive is the one that I'm most familiar with, in that actually when you're shopping at major retailers through PetGive.com, you can choose the American Veterinary Medical Foundation as a recipient to get a percentage of what you spend at Walmart or Borders or Target. You know, and so it's just another way to be able to give.
So these are all places where we're shopping anyway, and now a portion of the money goes to you?
Yeah, well, and it's online shopping. That becomes a little bit of the trick, if you will, in that it's if you're doing a lot of online shopping, that's how it happens. It won't happen if you're just you know, driving up to the retailer. But if you are shopping online, which, you know, mainly around holidays or special occasions, people do that, we would appreciate them remembering the American Veterinary Medical Foundation when they do it.
Or for those busy people and gas is still expensive, it's a great way. Save your gas money and go online and purchase your products that way. Good idea.
Right. Right.
Well, Mike Cathy of the American Veterinary Medical Foundation, thank you very much for being with us today. You've given us some more good information on ways that pet owners can get involved with not just taking care of their own pets, but pets and animals throughout the United States. The goal of the show has always been to entertain, educate, and to motivate you to be the best pet owner that you can be. Any questions? Drop me a line at thepetdoctor@petliferadio.com. Mike Cathy of the American Medical Veterinary Foundation, thank you so much for being with me today.
Pets can be a wonderful addition to your life. Keeping them healthy and happy is important. Pet Life Radio presents The Pet Doctor with veterinary media consultant and veterinarian Dr. Bernadine Cruz. Whether you have a dog, cat, reptile, or rabbit, you'll find answers for your pets straight from the vets. The Pet Doctor, on demand every week, only on PetLifeRadio.com.